What's up, everyone, and welcome to Metalcore Nerds. This is Sean Mott, your host. This week's episode, we have Johnny Crowder from prison in Cope Notes. At the beginning of the podcast, he helped me how to structure interviews and everything like that. So he is actually very integral into how this podcast got formed. And finally, we got to have a conversation about his career through music. Also, if you missed out this week, I did a live stream with Dan DeFonce on his Talks Metal podcast. It should be up on YouTube now, or I think you can probably still watch it on his Twitch channel. It's twitch.tv/DanFonce. Or if you look up DeFonce Talks Metal on YouTube, you should be able to find it. And I'm also on Joel Hastings' podcast again, talking about The Boys, which is one of my favorite TV shows right now. I'm also in the middle of reading the comics. I couldn't recommend that show enough, especially if you're not like a comic fan. It's the perfect show to do something comic if you're not exactly into that kind of stuff. And if you are into comic stuff, then it's definitely a show for you to watch. But definitely check those two things out. And we're getting it right in this conversation. Johnny Crowder. Hey, Johnny, what's up, man? How's it going?
I am actually pretty pumped because rumor has it that it's going to dip below 90 degrees in Florida pretty soon.
Wow.
So stocking up on winter coats and stuff.
I mean, you can come to New York. It's already 60, so.
Oh, it sounds amazing.
I kind of hate it, but
yeah, it's all right. Grass is greener.
Yeah, it's in the morning, it's like 40, so that's kind of whatever. But as soon as it gets to like afternoon, it gets to like 60, and you're like, oh, okay, this is fine.
I remember a Christmas, maybe, I don't remember if it was last year or the year before because time doesn't exist anymore, but no, I remember one Christmas I was wearing a t-shirt and jeans in Florida, and I remember thinking, wow, I shouldn't have worn jeans today. December 25th, and I was soaking sweat. I can't remember what year it was, but I remember being like, wow, this is only a Florida thing, it feels.
Yeah, for sure, because usually Sam, my wife and I, we go to Disney and Universal. Usually we go like in October and then we'll go around our birthday, which is end of January, February. But our birthdays are like within a week of each other. Mm-hmm. And usually when we go in, you know, January, February, it's full on winter here, like straight up, you know, foot of snow. And then we go down there and we're like in a t-shirt and shorts and like, this is sick.
Thank you.
It's good, but I can understand being in the hot so much, and especially how hot it gets there, that wanting some cold would make sense.
It's all situational. I think it's more fun to live in a hot place when you can go do things like go to the beach or go to like a water park or something. But since everything is closed, I just don't even want to dip my toe outside.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, it gets pretty humid in New York, but it's still not as hot, you know, like where you as it could be like 100 and then humid. So it feels like it's like 120 or some shit like that. And it's here, it's like 90, but still super humid. So it's,
yeah,
it like just scratches the surface of where you guys are anyway. So I completely understand. Like I have friends who live in Texas and it's always ungodly hot there. And mm-hmm. So I can understand for sure. Wanting a little bit of some chilliness to your life. So there was I wanted to say, because we were talking about this a little before we hit record, that for anyone listening, Johnny helped me out super when I first posted, like, hey, would anybody be interested if I did a podcast? You reached out to me and helped me out with laying out how to structure like episodes and what to send to guests and everything. And I just wanted to give you credit for that. Usually when anyone asks, I'm like, oh yeah, Johnny from Cope Notes, actually, he sent me his layout and he's like, yeah, just use whatever you want, change whatever you want, all good. And that's been the biggest help for me from the start to make everything smooth and as professional as possible. So again, thank you for that. I thanked you a million times when you first did it. It was so cool for you even to reach out to me and say it, but thank you. And I'm glad we're finally doing an episode together. I know it's been we've been talking about it since I've started now. So it's good to make it finally happen.
No, I'm so happy that it's actually being put to good use and that it helped, because when I started, I was like, what do I freaking do? Because I've been on so many interviews where people just kind of say, you know, what's the deal with Cope Notes? And I'm like, it. Wow, you didn't probably didn't write anything, did you? And I actually did an interview on tour. This is when we made the mistake of hiring a press person to handle our release. This is Dark Sermon days a while ago. And I remember that we were paying this guy like $1,200 a month or something. Mm-hmm. And we did this interview, I think it was in New York, and the guy said, you know, it's so weird. I looked you guys up and couldn't find anything on Google and Spotify and Instagram. Couldn't find you anywhere. And I was like, really? That's terrible. What, how, we need to talk to somebody at our label about it. And he goes, yeah, I typed in Black Sermon and pretty much all it was all these preachers. And I was like, oh my, you literally God. Don't know the name of this band. And we fired our PR guy after that.
Yeah, because so, yeah, usually I'm a fan the of PR guy would prep the person like, oh, hey, here's some links, or something, you know, like
you would hope that.
Because I've even done a few episodes where it's just talking about like pop culture news. And in that, if there's like a trailer or something, I linked the trailer in it. And it's not like this is like some crazy professional news podcast, you know, but even that I'm like, hey, if you haven't seen it, I mean, obviously you can easily Google and put it in YouTube and you'll find it, but here it is. So you can just click it right there instead of making someone search for something. That's insane.
Yeah. I remember and it was on camera too when he said that.
So you guys were all like,
yeah, my face just kind of melted. And I was like, oh, you literally don't know what my band is called. And you scheduled this interview with someone that we're paying money.
That's unreal. That's terrible. Yeah. Oh my God. Because you think when you do interviews of any kind, you got to research at least a little bit.
I also, yeah, I have way too many bad interview stories to share. The last thing I'll say is that Prison's first record is called NGRI. It's an acronym. And, I did an interview with this guy who said, now tell me about Angry. And I didn't know what he was talking about. And he said, your album, Angry. And I said, we've never released, we only have, at the time we only had one record out. And I was like, we only have one record that might be by another band. And it took us a while to realize that he was talking about NGRI. And I was like, no freaking way.
And he just thought it was Angry or something. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. That was a journey too.
It's so weird how people read if it's an acronym or a different word and then say something else. I was talking about this with someone else, and so many people, because I used to work a 9-to-5 design job for years, like almost a decade until I started working for myself. But people would always email me back and call me Scott all the time. And it's like my name.
Oh, they'd like mash your.
Yeah, they would mash my first name and last name. But it's usually it would be like Sean at something. And then my name would be in the signature and everything. And I'm like, how do you just like combine that? Like, how does that happen?
Heck yes.
You know, I mean, obviously I've gotten the Sean spelt different ways, which is like, how do you know? There's like three spellings of Sean.
Right.
Someone just says Sean, you're not going to know.
But if it's in your email address.
Yeah, that like... And it's like, hey, Scott. And I'm like, who's Scott?
Like, I'll forward this to Scott.
Yeah, I was like, I'll let Scott know. It was funny because the last like full-time job I had, the owner of the company, his name was Scott.
Oh, no.
So if I was like, I could forward it to Scott, I actually could have. So that would have been pretty funny.
Just like, yeah,
Scott, what's up? So I want to know, obviously the pandemic has affected everyone and anyone. We've all been home for months at this point, almost 6 months or so. So what have you been doing? Like, have you had any extra time to like read some stuff you wanted to read or watch some movies or TV shows you wanted to watch, or maybe play some video games you never had time before? That's been my new thing, rather than asking how it's affected everyone. Cause at this point we all know it's affected everyone. So I've been interested if there's anything you got to do, or even if it's like a new hobby or something, like if there's anything new you got to get into with the extra time most of us have now.
Yeah. I think, this year, one of the biggest fruits of not being able to do anything that I wanted to do was that I got to revisit one of my very first passions of my whole life, which is cars. I loved cars growing up so much. I was the kid with the Lamborghini poster in his room and would like always geek out about like car magazines. And then as I started getting more into music, and that started taking up a larger and larger chunk of my time, I kind of grew away from cars and I spent all my time in a van and just kind of lost my love for it. And then this year I realized like, wow, well, I can't go play basketball and I can't go to the gym and I can't go rehearse and I can't track music and I can't, like, realizing that I couldn't do all the things that I really wanted to do. I couldn't even go to church. And then I was like, what am I going to do with the time that I would normally do those things? And I tried not to work. That was my main rule. Like, I can't work during those hours because I will lose my mind. So I started turning to cars and getting back into reading car reviews and watching car reviews and learning about all these new cars. And I had tuned out of the car world for like 15 years or more. So I've missed a lot of stuff. So now I'm catching up on all of these beautiful supercars that have been invented over the last couple decades that I just totally didn't hear about. So it's a lot of fun. I actually, my sister got me for my birthday, one of the new Lamborghini Sian, I think it's called, S-I-A-N. And I love this model so much. It literally, I have this same car, a different spec on my desktop background. And it's cool to allow myself to geek out about something that isn't related to like saving the world. It's just like something that I enjoy just because I enjoy it. You
like
know?
An actual hobby rather than something that's...
Yeah, and I've been going to car meets and stuff because they, a lot of them are outside. So it's easy to stay a fair distance from people and you're just walking around looking at people's cars. And it's been like my saving grace in terms of social interaction because I can't go to all the places I want to go, but I can go to car shows. And that's been a dream for me to just have somewhere to be, to look at this beautiful functional art without being in danger.
True. Have you been going to the gym now? Because gyms have been open for you for a while now, right?
So I started going back to the gym after I got COVID because now I have antibodies. But I did, before that, I was working out at my house and I was running out of ideas. So I would literally carry, I would find something really heavy, like my recycling bin or something, and just carry it for miles, like over my head, out in front of me, and just walk for a couple hours. And I kept just trying to come up with different ways to use my body. But now that I've already had COVID, I am so relieved that I can go back to the gym.
Yeah, that's fair. New York's been very careful with everything, which I appreciate a lot. And they just like a month or two ago started having gyms open. So I've went a few times, but I've gotten so accustomed to doing stuff not at the gym that it was just weird for me.
Yeah.
Cause I've been doing like all these like non-weight, like body motion, like HIIT exercises, or I've been riding my bike a lot, but now that it's getting colder, it's, I won't be able to ride my bike for much longer, maybe a month or two before it's just too cold to ride outside. And so I know I'll probably end up going to the gym a bit more, but it's been a little weird because I almost felt like the new routine I started was better, like produced better results for me for some reason. But I think it was also because I started doing it like every day. I would do some form of exercise every day. So obviously that helped rather than going to the gym like three or four times a week, which is still good. But it's when you're watching a video following along, it keeps you on track more than, you know, you at the gym just trying to, you know, figure out what the fuck to do next. And it is a little weirder now too, because it's like you don't want to go to a spot where it's a ton of people, you know, if it's like too congregated. So you kind of want to like pick and choose where you go. You're like, I wanted to do that, but I guess not. I'll go over here. But I'm sure I'll find some way to make it work once it gets too cold for me to do anything.
Yeah, I started training when I was like 13 or 12, like much younger than you probably should. And what I've noticed over, you know, that's 15 or 16 years of training. And one thing that I've noticed is the moment you switch something up, you break free from whatever plateau you didn't realize you were hitting. So when I was doing strength, I was lifting stupid heavy earlier this year. And then the pandemic hits and then I'm bike riding and doing a bunch of cardio and doing body weight and stuff. And then I start getting really toned and I was like, what? I was lifting way heavier than this before. Yeah. And I was kind of hitting a wall. And then, so after that, after like 6 months or so of that, then I get COVID. Now I'm back in the gym. And in the first couple months back in the gym, I'm seeing more progress than in the last 4 months of the previous thing. And what I'm learning is, as long as you switch something up every, like, I'd say probably every 4 months, every 4 to 6 months, like completely switch up your training style, and it just keeps your body guessing.
I'll have to ask you for some gym pointers. I'm not like a big lift guy, but it would be nice to, I'll ask you off recording some pointers on that stuff, because I really don't know much about stuff. I've just done stuff that's worked, you know, but that would be nice to have if you would be down to give me some pointers.
Heck yeah.
Sick.
Heck yeah.
Awesome. Are you, a random question, are you a big movie guy? Like, do you like going to the movies or no?
There's actually a joke in prison, a running joke that we pull out every single time we're interviewed as a band together. And the joke is that I've never seen a movie before. And we will like casually mention it. I hope that someone is listening to this and winds up watching one of those interviews where someone in my band will casually accuse me of not having seen a movie before, but loud enough to where the interviewer can hear. And then they'll ask like, oh no, let's talk more about that. I'm like, no, I don't want to make it a whole thing. And then we wind up doing this inside joke where I say that I've seen parts of movies and I know movie quotes, but I've just never seen a whole movie front to back in 30 years of being alive, 28. And so if this was a normal interview, I'd say, you know what? I've never seen a movie before, but because I know you slightly tangentially, I will say that the joke came from me really not having seen very many movies. Mostly if I have time to myself, I'm listening to music or doing something that is not on a screen, but I do watch a lot of like documentaries and YouTube. Stuff. So I really like learning. However, I love fiction, and I've seen a couple movies this year that I really enjoyed, and I'm kind of allowing myself to appreciate fiction now. And that's something that COVID has allowed, because before, I'd never sit in one place long enough to even watch like 30 minutes of a movie.
Oh, wow. That's wild. I was just mentioning that because I'm an avid moviegoer. Obviously, I have like a, you know, mostly pop culture podcast, but then I have episodes where it's like this, where it's really just getting to know you and your whole journey in music and stuff like that. But so I obviously go to the movies a lot, and New York is not opening up movies, but they just announced that like one of the biggest theater chains in the States is closing down, and it's not really a definite that it's coming back, because all of the major movies obviously have been pushed till next year. So there's really no point of a movie theater being open.
Yeah.
And the two biggest states, New York and California, for movies, they're, I know some spots in California are open, but LA isn't, which, so like obviously LA and New York City are the two biggest hubs for movies, especially moviegoers and everything. So there's no, and if there's no big movies coming out, it's like, what's the point of a theater opening up to show old movies or whatever at a limited capacity? It's just small markets like the town I live, or the city I live in. It doesn't make any sense. Like, they're just going to be, it's like a lot of venues opening up. If they're a small venue and they open up a limited capacity, it's like, is that really going to save them? Like, probably not, you know. Some venues I do completely understand them trying to find something, do like a movie night, like a social distance movie night, or doing a local show where the draw isn't that big anyway and they can make it work safely and stuff. I'm all for that. That's, you know, I hate seeing every day a new venue close and shit like that. It's so disheartening. It's terrible. But that's why I wanted, that's interesting. It's very interesting to see someone who really hasn't been a movie guy, but it's, you know, everyone has their own thing. So it makes sense.
I really wanted to be an actor growing up, but it's funny because I hadn't seen very many movies.
You just wanted to be the guy who, you know, like lost themselves in something and, you know.
Well, yeah, I think I eventually found an outlet for that through improv. Like, I wanted to be an actor. And then when I started doing comedy, I was like, oh, this is where I wanted to be, you know?
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. Awesome. So switching to music, what is the show or the band that you saw and you're like, I want to do that? I love this question because it's always so different for everyone.
You know, if I'm being 100% honest, so I've wanted to be a rock star like pretty much my whole life. And the first concert I ever went to, I had an image in my head of what a concert was. And then the first real concert that I went to was Aaron Carter.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I must have been 8 maybe or 7. Mm-hmm. I think I was 7 actually. And he was on Radio Disney, and that was like,
yeah,
you know, you're 7, it's Radio Disney. Like, yeah, you're rocking out. And I remember being like, you know what? This is embarrassing. I'll tell you this. After this concert, I heard something about Aaron Carter living in Florida. So I called every single Aaron Carter in the phone book and left voicemails asking if he would come play basketball with me. And I'm sure those people get those calls all the time. But I didn't even know as a 7-year-old that like children are not listed in the phone book.
Right, right. Like, why would you know that? Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that was kind of my first foray into like, wow, I like live music.
Okay.
And then I think when I started hearing rock, like heavier rock, like 3 Days Grace and Breaking Benjamin, and then eventually System of a Down and Linkin Park, that did a lot for me. But right. I think what really, really like made me realize that I like heavy music and I wanted to pursue that path was Slipknot's Volume 3. My okay. friend's dad had it. And my friend took it from his dad and he wasn't allowed to. And then he let me listen to it on the bus with him. And I was like, the rest of my life will be based on doing this.
That's awesome. That's a great record. It's funny you mentioned that. Sam is a manager at Hot Topic and they got in Subliminal versus 2005 tour t-shirts. Mm. So obviously we both own that shirt now. I would check. You can't. It's so weird because some of those shirts you can just buy online, but for some reason, those aren't available online. So I think they only went to stores. Dang. So wild.
Yeah, I gotta keep an eye out for them.
There was like a One Step Closer Linkin Park shirt that they put out recently too.
Heck yes! And I watched that music video last night.
Really?
Like that's the kind of person I am. I still live back then.
Oh, dude, I do too. So many people are like, yeah, what are you listening to? And I'll list like a band that's around now. And I'm like, but mostly I listen to like Armor for Sleep and 18 Visions.
Yeah.
They're like, oh. I'm like, yeah. It is what it is.
Yeah.
But then 18 Visions released a new EP last week. So I can say I listened to that.
Oh, dang. You're finally topical again. You're finally culturally relevant.
It's so weird because when you get ingrained in like the music scene, especially in the music industry part of it, it almost like, and there's so many bands now, and obviously you can't really reinvent the wheel anymore. I mean, some bands have done a good job at doing something completely different and everything, but it's so hard. And a lot of bands don't view records as records anymore. It's just like a bunch of songs that they put together and put out on a label.
Yeah.
So to win me over, it's got to be like a sick record. I mean, I'm sure, you know, bands put out singles and stuff. I'm like, oh, that's a really cool song. But the bands that really bring me in are bands that put out really good records. Besides that Static Dress band, but they're just like teasing, just putting out singles. They put out like 4 songs and they're legitimately one of my favorite bands. But they sound like they came from 2005. And that's why. They? Static Dress.
I've never heard of them.
They're from Europe. I think they're from the UK. But they're like a screamo band. They're like an early 2000s screamo band. Mm-hmm. They're fucking incredible. Like if I showed you this video and told you it came from 2005, you'd probably believe me. That's like, yeah. they look awesome. Like they look like from that time, except they're really smart because it's like all their videos, everything is so well done. But I know they have like a super big backing behind them already. I think Paradigm books them in the US and they have like a crazy big manager. Like they're going to be massive. They're going to be huge. But they've only put out 4 songs and they put them out as singles. They haven't even released like an actual release. Dang, I don't know if they're going to.
I wanted that to happen with Prison so bad. Like Dark Sermon had to tour for a couple years and earn.
Yeah.
Like really grind. And I mean, like I'm talking, you play 100 shows and you get paid dirt. And then someone's like, well, you got to earn your stripes. And it's like, what have we been doing? So Dark Sermon had like such a difficult path to finally get signed. And then once we got signed, we realized that doesn't change anything. You still have to quote earn it. And then with Prison, I was like, okay, hopefully we can just come out the gate with a lot of backing, with a lot of people behind us. They'll hopefully believe in me and everyone else in the band because we've been in signed bands before. And I was hoping to do what you're saying that band is doing, like release a couple singles, but they already have all that backing and they have so much momentum. They're like set up for success. And Prison had a lot of talks like that with a lot of people in the industry where they believed in us and they believed that we could be that, and then nobody followed through, and then we had to do it the hard way again. So I don't know, if I ever have a third band, maybe that band will be the one that starts out with that backing.
Yeah, and it's weird how that happened. It's very circumstantial and very kind of, I think, a thing of the right time, right place kind of thing, you know, of how that stuff happens, because that doesn't happen very often, you know what I mean? It's very strange that a band comes out and they're immediately big. Like if you even talk about like Knock Loose grinded for like 3 or 4 years before they became Knock Loose, you know. Ghost Ship played with them when they were drawing, you know, like 50 people. We played with them in a fucking garage in Indianapolis, like in 2010, you know, like Isaac still had long hair and it was like when pop culture just came out and like people talked about them, but they were nothing compared to what they are now.
Yeah,
you know, people are like, oh, they blew up overnight. It's like, no, they didn't. They toured nonstop for like 3 years until they got a real tour.
Like, yeah,
it's crazy how people view things that way too. But again, it's different for people like us who are, you know, it's almost like our everyday life. Like we're involved in everything in some way, shape, or form. So it's like we see all this stuff happen. We go to the shows where we see them, you know, when they drew no one to when they draw people and everything like that. So from like a normal casual person who just like goes to shows and doesn't pay attention to this stuff every day, I can see how they can be like, oh, this band came out of nowhere. Cause to them, they probably did. But to us, we're like, no, we've known about them for years. Like,
yeah,
that's how it is though. You know,
I think about like, so with Dark Sermon, we started playing shows when I was just turned 16. Like I just got my driver's license and I was in Dark Sermon for 8 years. Prison actually started in 2014. A lot of people don't know that. So I've been doing music for 12-ish years, give or take. And there are still times when we'll talk to an agent or we'll talk to a manager and they're like, you just got to earn your stripes, man. You just put in the work. And I'm like, over a decade? Holy crap. How long does this take? And I can only think of, you know, I don't know how many shows I've played at this point. I have a tour laminate thing that has probably 20 something laminates on it and I'm missing them. Like I've been touring for a long time and I still hear agents and managers be like, well, you just got to put your time in, man. It's just, and then all I think is, wow, if one day we blow up, someone out there is going to say, yeah, Prison blew up out of nowhere.
Right.
It's like, yeah, out of nowhere after 12 years. Like, you're right. The perspective is, like, when I saw King 810, like, just completely explode, I was like, well, excuse me, mister, my first tour is Mayhem and my second tour is a world tour with Slipknot and Korn. And I got salty because I was frustrated that I had been doing music for so long and I couldn't catch a break. And then here along comes someone who gets lucky and probably 99% of the time, way more legwork happened before that blow up that you just weren't aware of.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's completely right. You started talking about Dark Sermon. Were you in bands before Dark Sermon or was that like your first band?
So I was in Dark Sermon used to be called, ready for the worst band name in the world, it used to be called In Reference to a Sinking Ship. And a member of the band named the band that after a Norma Jean song. And then that member quit like immediately. And then I joined before they had even played a show. And then I was like, we got to change the band name. And unfortunately it took like 2.5 years for us to finally change the band name. But it's funny because labels were showing us attention as in reference. And then once we changed our band name, we got signed almost immediately. And it's like, wow, if someone would have just told us that the issue was that we had the worst, longest, most MySpace scene core
band name
band name in the world, we would have changed it way earlier. So it was definitely, I don't view it as being in a different band, even though stylistically it was very different. It was with the same people. I feel that I've been in two bands, Dark Sermon and Prism.
Okay, cool. That's kind of rare too, to see someone who's been in only two bands, but both bands have like done the thing, you know, like toured and done pretty successful tours at that. Cause even like I had Tuck from Fit for a King on here, and even he was in like a few bands before he got into Fit for a King. Cause obviously Fit for a King was kind of later in his career, but he was into like a number of bands before that even happened. He was in a band that I think he didn't get along with. I can't remember who he said it was, like the singer or the guitar player. And then he quit, and I think they got signed to Media Scare after. But something fucky happened with Media Scare, and I don't even think the album even really came out. It was something like, it didn't even matter if they got signed to Media Scare. It was kind of like a formality more than anything. But that's super cool that you've only been in two bands.
I feel very fortunate, but I will say it wasn't for lack of trying, because I tried to start a bunch of bands. I tried to join a bunch of bands, and it was like doors kept getting slammed in my face. Like something wouldn't work out, or someone would require me to move somewhere, or in a lot of cases as a vocalist, people will ask you to sing about or say things that you don't really believe in. So that was an issue for me. Like I had, I won't name the band, but I had a really big band, much bigger than Prison or Dark Sermon, much, invite me to be their vocalist after their vocalist left. And it was like a band I've been listening to for a decade. And it was like the opportunity of a lifetime, basically. Like I would get paid. I would be in front of, you know, hundreds, in some cases, thousands of people every night, like huge, huge opportunity. And they wanted me to sing the lyrics, and the lyrics were very negative, very anti-faith, which kind of clashes with me, and also very hopeless. There were some like pro self-harm kind of terms in what they sang, and I was like, well, maybe I'll get to write some of the new stuff. And they're like, no, we're gonna write the new lyrics. And I'm just like, holy crap. This wasn't the sole reason why I said no, but it was a huge determining factor. So I tried to be a part of other bands and get involved in other parts of the music scene. And I think so many things kind of played defense and blocked me out, that Prison and Dark Sermon were the only two things that actually caught traction.
Right.
And no one else even let me in the door fully, you know?
Yeah. And it's so hard being, it's like a difference being like, oh, you're a hired gun and you just kind of show up and play. And it's like, kind of like, oh, this is literally a job. Like I'm hired to be a touring guitar player or whatever, but
yeah,
be like, hey, you're going to be the vocalist, but we're going to write all the lyrics and you have no say in it. That's tough, especially because, you know, anyone who's been in a band, you probably understand it's a form of art, and to be in a band and not be able to put anything into it, that would, like, I couldn't even imagine that, you know, like what's the point of being in a band and being creative if you're just like the guy? I mean, I guess there are some bands like that where it's like, oh, the bass player just plays bass and maybe he spruces up the bass part or something like that. But it's, I'm sure like any band I've been in, everyone's had like creative input. It's like, oh, hey, what if I do this in this part? Or what if we switch up this part? You know, and that's part of the fun of being in a band and writing music, is collaborating with different people and making songs together rather than one person coming and be like, hey, here's the song, play it. You know?
Yeah. Like right now with Prison, I write a ton of the music. I split all the music writing 50-50 with Cooper, my guitarist.
Okay.
And in Dark Sermon, I didn't really have that level of autonomy. It was kind of like everyone kind of stayed in their own lane. Like the drum guy writes the drums.
Okay.
The guitar guy writes the guitars. And they were like, you write the vocals, but in prison, I can sit with Cooper and like kind of mime out a drum fill. Like, I'm like, yeah. No, it's do do ka ka do ka do do ka. And then I'll try to map it with him. I don't play drums, but right. I'm able to like try to play a riff and then hand him the guitar. And then he mm-hmm. actually does it 50 yeah. times better. And being able to even, I design all of our merch. I have designed all of our album artwork and stuff like that. And it's cool to have actual creative input. And I like the idea of filling in for that bigger band that I mentioned for a tour or something, but to actually be a full-time member and not be able to contribute, I think it would hurt my heart slowly.
Yeah.
It's, like it would kind of eat away at me.
That's rough. I did a tour for Lionheart, just filling in for them. And then that was kind of the thing. It was me. I just filled in for them, but even just filling in for them. And it's nothing to do with them. Like, I've been a fan for Lionheart for years beforehand, and Ghostship played a lot of shows with them. That's why they asked me to do it. Mm-hmm. But even then, I was like, I'm just like playing a cover set, basically. You know what I mean? It's not the same as going out there. And the shows were crazy. They were all packed. It was their first Europe headline tour. And they're like, now that's when they were getting big in Europe. Now they're massive in Europe. It's mm-hmm. fucking insane. But most of the shows, they were all club shows. And they were like, most of the tour was sold out. It was fucking crazy.
That's so sick.
But even now, I was like, it's not the same. It's not the same as playing your own music and people going crazy to shit that you put your heart into. You know, there's no right. feeling, there's almost no feeling like that, but it was yeah. still, it was still an amazing experience and everything. But even just that was like, you get to a point where like, yeah, this is cool, but it's not the same.
Yeah.
It like weighs on you a little bit. Like I was saying, it like makes your heart sad and stuff. Like mm-hmm. even that, like doing something super cool, but after having, you know, people go crazy to music you put yourself into, it's not the same. At yeah. all. I know you guys toured a ton, like Dark Sermon toured a ton, and a lot of the tours, like I was doing some research and everything beforehand, obviously, because I knew Dark Sermon was, but I didn't really know like what exact tours you guys supported and stuff like that. So I was like, let me check out what tours I've done. You guys did a ton of super sick tours. So I want to know like what you learned from that and kind of what you brought into like prison per se after. You know, because touring is such a learning experience, obviously. Anyone who's touring know you can learn a ton from either from any like from yourself for life, being in a band, how to perform live and everything. So what were your biggest takeaways from touring that hardcore and going and starting a new band after that?
A few things come to mind. The first of which is it's a very humbling experience to tour, no matter where you are in the lineup. So if you're an opener and you're playing and there's still a line wrapped around the door and there are kids outside and you have to play, I can't explain what it does to your heart. Like, oh, if that guy would just stamp people's wristbands faster, these kids could be inside and we could play in front of people. But here I traveled 3,000 miles to play in front of the 17 kids who made it here in time to watch us. Right. Like, there's a lot of humility that comes from realizing that you are where you are in the pecking order. And listen, man, if it says you're off stage by 6:25, but the flyer or the Facebook event for the show says doors are at 7:30, you just have to play.
Yeah.
There is no, I'm going to call someone's manager and I'm going to make a big stink. It's like, bro, you're the first band. And while it's not fair, you just kind of have to suck it up. And it's one of my, it's a beef that I have with the music industry is that it's almost like if you're a lower ticket band, your input isn't as valid. And this is right. kind of true everywhere. And it's just something that feels more visceral as a smaller band because you're traveling just as far as everybody else. You are playing, you know, it's, everyone makes the same commitment on a bill. Right. And just because it's like, imagine traveling just as far, ordering just as much merch, paying, having all the same overhead, only you're making a quarter as much as the band above you. And that band gets to play later in front of more people. And you really have to get over yourself, which is a terrible feeling. And so that's something that I think I learned is like, listen, if it says we're off stage at 6:25, we better be wrapping up by like 6:23.
Right.
And you learn to just kind of know your role and respect the bands above you, because whether you like it or not, they're above you on the bill. They are your teammates for the next 2 months. So you really better do what you can to support them. So I think one thing that comes to mind is just the how humbling it is to support right. bigger bands. And a lot of them won't know your name. A lot of them won't know anything about your band. A lot of them won't watch you for the whole tour. We've experienced a lot of that.
Right.
So you kind of have to develop a thicker skin. But at the same time, it taught me don't tour too much, because Dark Sermon broke up because every member got too tired. We got signed when I had just started college. So none of us had even gotten a chance to be people yet. We couldn't have girlfriends. We couldn't have apartments.
Right.
Like all of our friends were getting jobs and experiencing young adulthood. And we were in Wisconsin digging our van out of the snow that we just slept in. Like it's, right. I think part of the imbalance that I had in Dark Sermon is we all thought if we tour 8 months a year, we'll get big. And the truth is, you don't decide if you're big.
Right.
There are so many, you could be the greatest band in the world, but if someone's uncle doesn't decide that you deserve to be on the cover of a magazine, or if your agent loses a Mario Kart match with another agent for the opening slot on Summer Slaughter, which is something that literally happened. And that's how we lost the Summer Slaughter opportunity. When you realize how fickle the industry is, you realize if I tour 4 months this year, 8 months, my opportunity to impact this culture is somewhat determined by me and somewhat determined by external factors. So you learn, I'm gonna do my 4 months. I'm gonna do my 6 months or 2 months. I'm only gonna take tours that I feel are intelligent for us. And if we have to stay home for a while, we will. I think it taught us, don't try to cram 15 years of touring into, you know, 3 years thinking right. that you'll grow any faster. It really is a matter of taking your time and doing what's best for the band long term. And Dark Sermon didn't do that at all.
Yeah, because you can, even touring too much is definitely a thing, especially for a band that's building, because a band could be like, oh, especially for tour opportunities, like, oh, hey, you could have gotten this tour offer, but like, hey, they just got off tour. It doesn't make sense to put them on another mm-hmm. full US tour. They were just there. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously there's radius clauses now.
Yeah. If your manager decides that you don't need to follow them, which we've seen too, we've seen some people get out of, we actually saw this one band play the same exact venue 3 times in 3 weeks on 3 different tours.
That
they did
insane.
Like a full tour, and then they did part of a leg of another tour, and then they did another tour. And it was 3 times in 3 weeks at the same venue. And we were like, radius clause much? And we were on one of those tours with them, and they're like, yeah, I mean, our manager worked his way around it. I'm like, holy crap, we need like a buff manager who's just like, prison can do what I say they can do.
Yeah, and that's the thing that sucks too. It's like, depending who your team is, you can get away with anything, which yeah. sucks. And like, obviously, I've only been a small mid-tier booking agent, so it's like, I've obviously never been in anywhere near to throw around that weight. I have been able to work around stuff, being like, oh, hey, like with Last 10, they did the Fit for an Autopsy release tour. And then
real quick, sorry to interrupt. I'm listening to their new record right now. Like when I paused it to do this interview, I was listening to them literally at this exact time. So shout out to Last 10.
Hell yeah. That's awesome. I love those guys.
Anyway, I just wanted to show them love. Go ahead.
Oh, of course. Welcome to anytime. I love them as people. I love them as a band. Mm-hmm. I've known Wyatt for almost 10 years, and that's why we work together now, because obviously they've had issues with managers and agents, or mm-hmm. maybe not issues, but it just didn't work out for them. So now they wanted to go with someone they knew, and it worked out. But they did the Fit for an Autopsy release tour, and then we got an offer for that Born of Osiris tour, which I think like 2 or 3 shows kind of overlapped, so I had to make some calls to make it work. And luckily I'm friends with the agent who books Fit for an Autopsy, so I was like, hey, can you know, we make this work, whatever. And mm-hmm. that I got to work out. And obviously born of Osiris' age and didn't really care. He's like, whatever, you guys are. Sometimes they just don't care. They're like, hey, they're the support band. Like, it's cool.
Yeah.
And they weren't the exact same cities. It was kind of just like they were in the radius. So yeah, they were like, yeah, it's fine, don't worry about it, which is cool. That's awesome when that happens. Obviously, there's times like what you're mentioning that should not happen. That's a little too much. Yeah. Three times in 3 weeks at the same venue. That's
yeah, too
much. I can see like twice, you know, maybe in like the same month, maybe.
Yeah.
Because it's weird because I used to live in Syracuse, and when Straight from the Path was first like exploding, I seriously saw them, I swear, every month in Syracuse on a different, supporting a different tour, which is funny because every time I saw them, more people knew them, which was super cool, yeah, to see. Cause it was like me and my friend, like, oh, we love Straight from the Path. This is fucking sick. But like no one knew them yet. It was like right when Make Your Own History came out. So it was like the rise of Straight from the Path. So it was, yeah, funny to see like, you know, like, oh, 5 people know the words. Oh, 20 people know the words. Oh shit, the whole venue
so sick
knows all the words, which is crazy. Cause I think like Tom from Straight tweeted something. He's like, we were here a month ago and no one knew who the fuck we were. So this is sick, you know,
or yeah,
something like that, which I was like, that's shit. Like, that's cool to see. But at the same time, you're like, how did they get away with that? Maybe it's cause they were the opener. I don't know. It's, that's the one thing I hate about something, or I guess my biggest gripe with the music industry is that the playing field is definitely not level for everyone. Which I get it. Some people have been in this for decades at this point, and some people definitely have earned their spots at the top and everything, mm-hmm, on the agent or the manager role. But it's a little disheartening when they don't let, and this isn't the case across the board, definitely not, but when they don't let the up and comers kind of come in, whether it be the band or the agent and the band kind of come in, it's like they pick who's cool. And if they're cool, they can come support this tour and shit like that. It's just like, I feel like so many bands get so many opportunities wasted just because no one will take a look at them, which is a bummer.
I think that one of the biggest concerns that I have with rock music in particular, because I listen to a lot of acoustic and folky type stuff. I listen to a ton of rap. And obviously I listen to a fair amount of rock. I think what rock is doing that is endangering the future of, you know, its own longevity of the genre is it kind of wants to maintain the legacy of the bands that have been big for 10, 20, 30 years, mm-hmm, at the expense of sort of nurturing the smaller bands. And at one point, what's going to happen is those big bands will fall off and they'll realize, who's going to headline our festivals?
Yep.
We haven't put the time and attention into the person we're going to hand the torch to.
Yep.
And when some vocalist passes away, or when some band breaks up, or when some band loses their allure with modern listeners, they're going to realize, oh no, we have 1,000 small bands that we have not invested in, and then like 36 mid-tier bands that can't headline a festival.
Yep.
And it's our fault. I'm concerned that the bands that actually have the potential to carry the torch are being squashed down because, you know, look at rap. Every big name in rap right now, nobody had heard of a couple years ago.
That's very true.
In my opinion, that is better for the longevity of the genre. I think rock likes to preserve the longevity of an artist. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, we're going to do a 30-year, 40-year tour for this band. And they're not concerned about whether the genre will still be around. But with rap, mm-hmm, there's new blood. Oh, top 40. If I look at top 40, I'm like, who are any of these bands? But if I look at a festival, a rock festival, I'm like, I've literally
heard all these bands my whole life.
Every single festival. And it makes me sad because as someone who is biased from doing this for over a decade, I feel that so many people who, I know so many people in my position who have been doing it forever, who have amazing music, who have sold literally probably $1 million in merch by now,
right, to
like tons of listens and resonated with all of these people all over. And then they get shelved because a legacy band deserves the higher spot or whatever. And all, right, I think is if rock dies, it will be because we refused to invest in young talent for the sake of preserving the legacy bands that, in my opinion, are fairly close to retirement.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and we have already seen bands like Motley Crue did their last tour and shit like that. Like that, these bands retiring is already happening. Mm-hmm. A cool thing I have seen in the past couple of years, at least, is like Under Oath did that Alice in Chains tour and shit like that. Like bands like that are starting to get like stadium tours, which are cool.
I think that's the only path forward, that and touring with other genres. Like I want Prison to tour with Lil Pump and Katy Perry. Like I want to, I think for the longevity of rock, we have to pair the core bands with the legacy bands so that those listeners have somewhere to go. Mm-hmm. And then we have to make sure that we're also not leaving out, look at a rap video. It's mosh pits, dude.
It started with Waka.
I need, in my lifetime, in my career as a musician, I need to see rock and rap finally coincide. There's been a lot of little attempts here and there, and they try to get some off the ground. It doesn't work. It has to be an intentional joining of fan bases, mm-hmm. and probably most Prison fans listen to rap. It would be easy swap, and I'm sure that's true for a lot of metal bands.
Oh, yeah. I completely agree with that. And I always love mixed genre stuff. That stuff's always the most interesting because, mm-hmm. you know, you're not going to a show and seeing not the same band, but, you know, a band that's they're all very similar five times over. It's like if you can get some real variety in there, that's only going to help shit grow, you know, and that's exactly what you said. And there's also a thing that's been hurting super bad, especially in the past couple of years, is there'll be a decent sized headliner, like a good club sized headliner tour, and then the opener buys on for like $20,000 or some shit. Which for one, no one gives a fuck about that band because no one knows who the fuck they are. They have literally no notoriety. So no one's going, you know, it's not like a band like Prison or like Chamber or whatever, you know, being like, I know that band. At least if you haven't listened to them, like I've heard of them through someone else. I'm going to go check them out. You know, I'm going to go watch them because they're opening. But if this band who you've never heard of in your life and there's no buzz online, people aren't going to be like, yeah, I'm going to go check them out. They're like, nah, I'll show up late. You know what I mean? So it's like,
and those bands, those buy-on bands break up, bro.
Oh yeah.
You can't spend 20 grand and survive.
No, they do that tour and then they're gone.
So instead of building up a band that has potential to grow, and I understand, because we're getting into systemic problems, because it's like if that headliner was actually getting paid enough to make a living, then they wouldn't have to do buy-ons.
Nope.
So the problem goes from the opener, the local bands, all the way to headliners who are charting on Billboard, who are selling out tours, are getting jobs. They're getting part-time jobs. We sold 12,000 records first week. This is amazing. And they'll do all of this. They'll succeed in every respect and then not be able to support themselves. So it creates a system where they have to get a buy-on just to cover their van or their bus.
Yeah, that's true.
It's ridiculous.
That's very true. It's most like a lot of things in this country where the system is very much flawed and it doesn't work.
Dude, what I just realized, this was a couple days ago. I realized that if every single person who liked Prison's Facebook page gave us $5 once a year, we could all take salary.
And that's like a CD or something, you know?
Less.
Yeah.
If you gave us $5 one time every year, just the people who like our Facebook, not on Spotify, not on Instagram, like all the other places that we've seen people. And think about it. If you did that, we wouldn't have to charge for merch. We wouldn't have to charge for CDs. We wouldn't have to charge for concerts because we would be earning a living making music. We would put out so much more music. We'd put out literally free merch or at-cost merch.
Which is crazy.
But people will think, I'd rather buy one Starbucks coffee one time
right,
than provide an entire year's salary for the members of my favorite band.
That's crazy.
Right?
Yeah, it's like actually insane.
And this, what I think what makes me so sad is everyone knows the music industry is broken, but yeah, then we all participate. Like, we'll get a tour offer and then our guarantee gets cut and then we're put down, we're swapped down a slot on the lineup. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, well, we have to take it because we booked our whole fall around this.
Right.
And there's, it's too late now. And we allow ourselves to be bullied. And I think a lot of bands do, because yeah, what makes music different from every other, from a lot of other industries, is if you're an accountant and you spend 10 years doing professional accounting and then you apply for a job and they say, listen, I know you said you wanted $100,000 a year. We're actually going to pay you $20,000 a year. You're going to need to work 80, 90, 100 hours a week. We will not respect you. You're going to be totally disposable and we can fire you at any time. And you'd say, F you, I've been doing this for 10 years. I know my worth, I'm leaving. But music, the music industry can do that because they say, oh, you don't want to take a fifth of what you wanted? Well, there's the door, because there's 1,000 kids behind you who want this exact opportunity, who yep, will starve, who will lose their apartment, who will break up with their girlfriend, who will cut off ties with their family in order for us to take advantage of them. And it's such a toxic, manipulative atmosphere. And yet, even knowing that, I still have to participate in it to make yeah, music.
No, yeah, you're completely right. Like, even if I looked at professional, like someone hit me up for a design and I'm like, here's the price. And they're like, yeah, I can't do it. I can easily go, well, that's what it is. Sorry. But mm-hmm, you know, if it was in the other foot, if it was something with like, oh, hey, can I get this band on a tour? Hey, I'll throw in my work for free. And they're like, okay, yeah, we'll do it if you do that. And it's like, you know, it's like I'm literally devaluing myself to get a band on a tour, which I've done before because I yeah, want to help out the band and I want to grow the band. But it's like, it's the same exact thing, you know, like if it was the other situation, I would be like, no. If it was someone I knew and they're like, hey, I can only do this, I'm like, of course, I'm not going to, mm-hmm, it's someone I know and have a relationship with. I'm not going to be like, no, that's the price, take it. I'll be like, hey, what can you do? I'll work with you. Especially in times like this, like everyone's fucking hurting for everything.
So yeah,
I'd be like, this is all I can do. I'm like, okay, I'll make it work, you know. But if it was someone new who I don't really have a rapport with, like, you know, even if you got referred by someone, I don't really know who you are, and the person didn't really know them that well either, I'd be like, this is what it is. If you don't like it, like, sorry, like, this is how I pay my bills. So it's like, I understand if you can't, but like, is what it is. But mm-hmm, yeah, I guess I've never really thought about, I have thought about that way, but not fully in that much of depth, I guess. But you're completely right.
Dude,
I'm sure most people will agree.
I've ruined my life in a lot of respects for music. And then I talk to people in the industry who say, well, you really haven't ruined it enough. You don't want it enough. You haven't grinded enough. And it's, to me, the music industry is so toxic that every time that I've considered quitting music, which is many, it's all been around the culture of the industry, never the culture of a concert. Like, being with kids and having people yeah, jump around and push each other and hug and line up at the merch table. And there's so much connection there. And I think that we're going over time here, but I genuinely think that this time next year, a quarter of the bands we love will be broken up.
Yeah.
A quarter of the venues that we love will be shut down. A quarter of the booking agencies and all this stuff, there will be casualties. And I think the casualties on the artist front will be felt, because if you give someone a chance to make $12 an hour and live with their girlfriend and shower every day, all of a sudden they're like, I'm not getting back in a van, because they've been away from the only part of music that's rewarding, which is spending time with yeah, fans. So if you give people enough time away, they start to focus on, wow, the music industry is really corrupt and my agent talks down to me all the time and our manager is really sketchy and has actually taken more money than we owed him. And you really start to get a picture of the industry. I know a lot of musicians who their bands haven't officially broken up, but behind closed doors, they all decided they were going to quit because if you spend long enough away from the only intoxicating, alluring part of being a musician, you start to realize all the flaws and how unhealthy it is. So prison is trying to do everything we can to stay creative, because the only thing that feels even remotely as good as spending time with kids at shows is making music. And if we stop that, there's no reason to stay in the game.
Yeah, that I completely agree with that. I mean, it's happened definitely for me in a sense from the booking side, because I'm like, I busted my ass for years and it's gotten me to a point, but it's like, should I be at a further point? Should I not be? You know, it's all in your head playing with this stuff and everything. And it's like, well, I have helped grow these bands. And then there are certain bands where they're like, yeah, I don't want to work with you because we're the reason we got these opportunities, not you. So we're just going to do it ourselves. And like, that sucks to hear, because it's like,
yeah,
you know, you helped them with those opportunities, but bands are always going to see it from a different perspective. There's always two sides to the coin. Always. There's always two perspectives. But being away from it, I'm like, wow, I mean, like, that took a toll on me. Like, being an agent takes a toll on you mentally, for sure. Because it's like, they're, you know, very, I mean, there's bands that appreciate me for definitely, for sure. But there's other bands that are like, well, how come we're not doing the same as your band on your roster? And, you know, how come we're not getting these opportunities? And it's like, I was like, I can only do so much. You know what I mean? It's not a perfect laid out formula and everything like that. So from both sides, there's definitely obviously different circumstances, but I've definitely felt like exactly what you're saying. Like, wow, I've been away from this for 6 months. Cause especially now, there's no point of planning tours. We have no idea when shows are going to come back. We have no idea. Like, some bands have asked me and I'm like, I don't have an answer for you. Like, like, you can see band, like, someone was like, oh, I see tours getting rescheduled. I'm like, well, good for them, but it's probably going to get canceled. Like, I'm not being mean, just being real with you. It's probably not going to happen. And I don't want to put any work into it until, especially now that tours have been rescheduled, because I had bands on support tours that got rescheduled and got rescheduled again. And now they're at a point where like, yeah, it's probably going to get canceled because we don't know when these are going to happen, because every state regulation is different. So it's like, you're not going to do a full US tour when you don't know what states you can hit.
And
all these bands doing tickets, they're not going to want to do limited capacity shows, or like, what heavy band wants to do a socially distant show? Like, that takes away everything that you love about shows.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're going to take away the energy out of a show. Like, watch a YouTube video. Like, I can see, like, live streams, that makes sense, because it's like, you're seeing it, but it's better to be sitting at your house watching it than, like, sitting in a venue, just sitting there watching a band. Like, that's so weird to me. You know, like, how, like, I can't imagine going to a show and just being, and, like, just seeing people, like, sit there, like, a heavy show. Like, it makes sense for all these big bands doing these outdoor, socially distant shows, because it's like, that's fine. Those are the type of bands you go to see. Like, if I went to see John Mayer at a socially distant show, like, I'd probably like it better because I wouldn't be around a bunch of weirdos.
Yeah.
That, you know, like, cool, I'm watching John Mayer, like, uninterrupted with my closest friends next to me. Sounds pretty sick. Like, even, like, Slipknot. Like, if I saw Slipknot, like, big bands, it makes sense. Like, you're already seeing them in an outdoor setting. You know, like, it kind of makes it better that, like, you aren't, like, bothered with people, you know? Like, but if you're going to see like a prison or like a Lorna Shore or any band, like Fit for an Autopsy, like you want to see that like sitting in little groups of four around a venue. Like, that sounds terrible. But we'll see when shit gets back. Like you said, there's going to be bands broken up, agencies broken up, venues not there. Even when touring does get back together, it's going to be a whole shift of what the fuck is even open. Because like, the, you know, Vaudeville Muse in Des Moines closed, like the only venue in Omaha for like smaller tours closed. And it's like, that's a big section from the Midwest to Colorado. I guess there's just gonna be drive days there now, unless you play Kansas City or like Wichita or something. But even those can be like hits or miss too. So it's like, all of these venues are going away. So it's like, we're going to have to figure out how to even make tours happen when they come back, even when they do.
We're probably going to sell our van and trailer because we were like trying to keep it for a while. Right. And then now like we're still paying insurance on it. We have to pay to store it. And it's just like we're just losing hundreds of dollars every month for something that we can't use. And then you just got to think of, if we don't know when we're touring again, we can't keep saying, well, let's save this for tour. And well, let's plan to do like an in-ear rig. What are we going to do with it? It's a money pit and we could better spend that somewhere else. And we're just, we're right now, it's a matter of survival and we're just switching to focusing on music. We are writing a ton of music. We plan on doing a lot of single releases to just try to create something and provide value for people that we can't see in person. And hopefully that will get us to the next stage of concerts, whatever that is. But if anyone is listening to this and they're like, I'm in a band and what the heck do we do in between? You have to be creative. Make something. Please make something, a merch design, a song, an intro, mash some samples together to make your own unique. Do something, because you just like, I broke my elbow once and I couldn't bend my arm for about 2 months. I had it in a cast, and your muscles atrophy. And I think the same thing happens with creativity. So just don't allow yourself to go 5, 8, 12 months without creating something just because you're waiting for shows to come back. Like we're all waiting for shows to come back. But in the meantime, please do something to exercise that muscle so it doesn't get damaged.
Yeah, that's what I've told any of my bands. They're like, what should we do? And I was like, the only thing you can do is create content, whether it be put out new music, do some music videos with the music, you know, do some playthrough videos, you know, do interviews, do podcasts, like do whatever you can to just not do nothing. I was like, is you can't hope on like, hey, let's book this tour, even if it's just us. Like you can't do that right now. You got to wait that out and see it. So a lot of my bands like went in the studio, recorded new music. And I was like, that's perfect. That's the only thing we can do right now is just release music, release content, and just show people you're there, you know, like Kingsman from they're on Sharptone and they've just been doing live streams like almost like once a month. Some of them have been like Q&A. Some of them have been like a few songs and a Q&A and stuff like that. Like, stuff like that is so important and vital. It's like, I don't understand why so many bands haven't done. I mean, some bands might not have the means to, which that makes sense. But I'm sure most bands can have a friend who can set up a rig and or hit up your local venue and be like, hey, can we team up and do a live stream show just so we can do something? Obviously, like Fit for a King's went off super well. Like Code Orange went off super well. I mean, those are different. Those are bands with insane followings at this point.
But, yeah.
You know, just do something. Like exactly like you said, just don't do nothing.
Yeah.
That's the biggest part to keep things going, because we cannot bank on shows, at least for a while. Because there's even people like Brendan from Counterparts was on Tuck's podcast and he's like, I don't even know if there's going to be touring next year. Which is a very big possibility that it might not happen. Maybe not until the end of the year, but it's everything's so up in the air. Like we don't have answers.
Yeah.
So we talked about why Dark Sermon called it quits. Can you tell, have you told the story about how Prison kind of got together?
It was just, so it was while Dark Sermon was still together, Cooper and I just started writing like a stupid, dumb, heavy project just for fun.
Yeah.
And we weren't allowed to put our names on it because we were signed to labels and we weren't supposed to start side projects or anything. So we just like wrote some fun internet stuff. And then we're like, let's just put it out on Bandcamp and see how it does. And then it was like enough people shared it with each other that it was starting to do like as well or better than our real bands. And it was like just people showing people. And we had no, I don't even know that we had a Facebook at the time. We just like put out some songs, no member info anywhere. And we never intended to do it full time because we were in full time bands. And then our full time bands broke up around the same time. And I looked at Cooper like, well, I'm not done with music. Just because everyone in my band is done with music doesn't mean that I don't want to make music anymore.
Right.
And I could either try to find, you know, like pull in a mirror and be the only member from before and try to rope in a bunch of new people, which works for some bands. I don't think it would have worked in my case. So I wanted to still do music. I just couldn't do it with Dark Sermon. And he was in a similar position where his band was breaking up. And actually Truck, our drummer, was in Cooper's old band Adalia, who was signed to Media Scare actually. So it was just like the perfect timing of the worst year of our lives, where like our purpose for being alive was collapsing. Right. And we kind of looked at each other, and we'd known each other for a decade, and we're like, well, we have something that we started. Do you want to just try to write a couple more songs and see if people like those? And then eventually we made the decision together that we wanted to actually try it for real. And that was scary because we were nervous that it wouldn't, you know, you have a 1 in a million chance of getting signed or getting tours or getting an agent or anything. It's so hard to get anything done nowadays because there's so many bands and people don't really throw bones like they used to. So now we were scared that if we started a new band, that it would be smaller and we'd have to start back from the local, playing local shows for a couple of years. And we're like, yo, either we are coming out the gate doing a legit tour or we are not doing shows, because my heart can't take another 2-3 years of being grinding, treated like dirt. Yeah. Like, we have to at least have a presence out the gate. So I consider myself very fortunate that we didn't have to start from square one.
Because that first tour was that Suicide Silence tour, right?
Yeah. And a lot of people thought we bought on to that tour.
Oh, I know.
And honestly, looking back, it was such a great tour that I can see how people would be like, how did they get that? But really it was, you know, you got to think we had been in the music industry for 8 years or more at that point, and had met a lot of people, had shared our music with a lot of people, had forged connections over almost a decade. So fortunately it was just the right person saw the right music video, shared it with the right person. And that was our first tour. And I think without that, I don't know that Prison would have actually tried full force to be a band if we would have had to start without doing real tours.
That makes sense. I mean, that's a reason why I never really got back into playing in bands. I played a few shows with The World We Knew, Frank Vanilli's band, but that was like, he's like, hey, you know, I tour, not now, but he's like, I tour like almost all year, either TMing, doing merch, whatever. Again, I've known each other for a while now, and he's like, hey, do you want to play in The World We Knew? He's like, we're not going to play many shows. The ones we do are going to be cool shows, and we might do like a small run here and there if it's like something really cool. But, and I was like, yeah, that's the kind of commitment I would want. Because after Ghost Ship ended, I did some stuff with Lionheart, but it was just filling in. It wasn't like I'm in the band or anything.
Yeah.
So that was just like easy. I was like, yeah, I'll, you know, I'll do that. That's fine. But after that, I was like, I don't want to be in it. Because so many people were like, oh, you know, let's jam, or like, don't you want to be in another band? And I'm like, no, like, I don't want to play local shows or go tour, you know, in a van and play to no one for 2 weeks. Like, I did that. Like, I'm good. Like, I did a lot of shit. I never thought I was going
to
do.
To your heart.
Yeah. I was like, I did that. And now I've kind of come to the point where I'm like, maybe I'll write some new music. Cause I haven't really wrote music in 6 years or something. It's crazy. After the Lionheart stuff, I sold all my gear and I didn't pick up an instrument until Frank was like, hey, do you want to do this? And I started learning those songs. So it was a good like 4 or 5 years when I even touched an instrument at all. I had no like desire. And plus I was doing like the agent stuff. So it was like, I was filling a different kind of void for music. I was like helping bands do stuff they always wanted to do. Like if I went to a fest, I got a band on, and seeing them play in front of hundreds or like close to like thousands of people, like it was so gratifying to me. I was like, this is awesome. Like watching, seeing their like reaction to kids to them, and then getting done with the set and being like, that was incredible. Like I've always wanted to do something like this. Like that filled that void for me that playing live music did. So I could totally understand how you wanted to be like, we want to start off doing shit right, or why are we going to put up ourselves through that again? Because obviously, like Adalia is like almost like famous for having one of the most like tough draws in the music industry, like for like the genre of music that we listen to, like ever. Like they're like the band, everyone's like, that band should have been massive. They're like, that's them. Everyone talks about it. You know what I mean? And they did some cool shit, but they should have done cooler shit, you know?
Yeah. I definitely, looking back, I think that the general momentum of both of our bands was like Dark Sermon was on track to do like the whole Behemoth thing.
Yeah.
And Adalia was on track to do the whole like Ghost Inside.
Yeah.
Kind of thing in terms of scale. Like we had done a lot of touring, we're super tight live, kids seemed to like us, sold plenty of merch, like, and then thing after thing after thing prevented us from achieving our full potential. And I think that's why we connected so much on Prison, because we looked at each other and we're like, listen, our experiences in this genre have been, you put blood, sweat, and tears, you sacrifice more than anyone will ever know to basically get sidelined. So either Prison is going to be the biggest band in the universe or we're not doing it, because we've already lost a decade of our lives that we can't get back for an industry that didn't give us anything. So we need to take this into our own hands. And it's given us an attitude with Prison where no, we haven't signed. We briefly worked with a manager and it didn't work out. Other than that, we've had no manager. We worked with an agent for a term, and outside of that, we've done everything ourselves.
Yep.
And I think the attitude is, this band needs to either be the biggest band in the world, like I said, and or the most fun band in the world, or we need to focus our time on other things, because we had already been so drained and scorned by the music industry that this has to be worth it or else we won't do it. And very fortunately, Prison has been super worth it.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. I mean, you guys have done this super cool stuff already, so it's good to hear that. And also, when I was doing research on Dark Sermon stuff, I noticed that we played a fest together in Florida. We played Southeast Beast Fest, and I didn't even realize this.
Oh, dang. Wow.
Yeah.
2014, maybe?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I remember, so that tour was super weird for us, because we went to Florida, from upstate New York to Florida in 5 days. We did like 4 shows. It was just like, it was pretty much like drive, play, show, drive, play, show, drive, play, show. Mm-hmm. And we got hooked up with a really good spot. We played like before Gideon on like the main stage or something.
So heck,
it was really a really good spot. It was the only time we ever played Florida. It was an amazing show and everything like that. So it was very cool to play it for sure. And also we had 3 fill-ins. It was only me and the singer who were from the band.
Holy
because
crap.
The rest of the, usually when we toured, we had probably had 2 fill-ins because the rest of the band just couldn't take off work or whatever. But this one, we had a drummer, guitar player, and bass player fill-ins. Nuts.
for
4 shows.
All I remember from that show is seeing Super Heaven for the first time and falling in love.
Ah, yes.
And seeing Fireworks for maybe the 4th or 5th time and realizing that they are one of the most fun bands to watch live, because each member is so genuinely content and happy and joyful on stage. And those are the 2 performances that really stick out to me, Fireworks and Super Heaven.
I loved Fireworks. And I was lucky enough, they played upstate New York ton of times. That would make sense because it was a super mixed bill. Like the day we both played, it was Newfound Glory headlining on that like anniversary tour. But
sick.
There was so many tours that combined, like the Ghost Inside, A Case of Strain, Gideon tour, In Heart's Wake was there. The Defeater Counterparts Capsize tour was there. And then there was like A Loss for Words and Citizen. It was like,
didn't King 9 play and Trapped Under Ice?
Probably. Yes. Cause I remember the day after was like Let Live and like Earth Crisis. And we didn't see the next day. We had to drive back to New York.
Yeah, that was on a tour for us, I believe.
That's awesome. Yeah, it was fucking crazy. It was like literally every tour happening at that time all played that fest. It was insane. Because if you go look at that flyer, like I was even like re-looking at the flyer, like looking at all the bands that played. And I was like, this is insane. There's so many fucking bands that played that you never would think played Fest together. And they're just like, yep, whatever. You're all playing. Dude,
I even think My Ticket Home might have played that.
They probably did. Like, literally everyone in that, like, scene, whether it was, like, so awesome. Pop punk through, like, deathcore, played it. It was crazy. Like, any band you could think of, they were on it. It was nuts.
Dude, is this podcast edited?
I can edit it if you need me to.
Okay, I just need to take a bathroom break.
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
Do you have an idea of how much longer this will run?
Ballpark? I had like one question left, so.
Okay. Sorry. I can't wait anymore. Give me a minute. You can keep this in the show if you want. I don't mind. I just have to pee so bad.
All right. After John's little bathroom break, we're back. So last
Four
thing I wanted
hours
to...
later.
Yeah. 7 years later. So the last thing I wanted to touch on was Coke Notes, obviously. You've done a lot of cool stuff with Coke Notes, the CNN stuff, the TED Talk stuff. So what made you want to start it? And also after that, I want to, obviously a lot of people, especially in our space who are more open with mental health and everything, if you can give them some advice maybe to help them with everything that's going on after you say the start, you know, obviously your insight would be much appreciated for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think Cope Notes was, you know, I tell one story, one side of the story when I do traditional press, and I get to tell the other side when I'm talking to like people in the scene. Yeah. But really, it was heavily influenced by music. I would talk to the kids at shows, and, you know, after the show, they'd be like, you know, this is the only thing that I have to look forward to for like the next, you know, for the rest of the year. This was really my only thing, was like looking forward to seeing you guys. And I would think to myself, like, that's amazing, but oh no, like I'm leaving, you know, before you even get to your house tonight, I'm packing up, getting ready to go to the next city. And kids would ask me at shows, like, you know, I know you've gotten over certain diagnoses and you've gotten healthier. What helped you? And I would tell them, you know, definitely therapy helped me a lot. Taking medication helped me a lot. Praying helped me a lot. Actually finding faith and trying to educate myself about the concept of God and if I really believed. And sleeping regularly, reading books about psychology and my diagnoses. And people were like, no. I don't like any of that. I don't want to do any of that stuff. And I realized that people wanted to feel better, but there was a resistance to all of the traditional measures that come along with recovery. And I wanted to make something that could help those people who didn't feel safe walking into a church, who didn't trust therapists and mental health professionals, who had a weird feeling about going to the doctor, or who didn't like group like support groups and stuff like that. I was like, how do I make something that helps those people, but also can be there on the days when they don't have a show that night, on days, you know, when maybe there's nothing exciting happening for the next 3 months in their life and they don't have something to look forward to? How can they have a little something to get them through each day? So the inspiration was seeing a huge need for daily mental health support and realizing that the only options were either too expensive, they were too personal, like collected way too much personal data, or they were really inconvenient to use. And I wanted to make something that addressed all of those things.
That's awesome. That's super cool, because obviously it's hard for, if you don't have health insurance, which a lot of people don't, it's hard to go to a therapist and not be insanely expensive. And a lot of people don't want to go to stuff like that, or like you said, it's too uncomfortable for them to go to a church, or, you know, to find some other means to make it better. So that's awesome. It's very commendable. There's been a few people in the scene who have done stuff like that, and I always think it's really cool, because obviously that kind of stuff can be detrimental on your own mental health in a way, because you have to kind of almost like take on, you know, other people's thoughts and everything. So it's like, it can be, it's like hard for someone to do that, you know, be like, hey, yes, I will help you. But it's like, you start that thing because you had issues like that as well. So it's like, now you have your own issues that you've gotten better at, or, you know, mostly gotten rid of, but then now you're kind of taking on other people's too, which is, can be very taxing, obviously.
Yeah. I heard this sermon recently by this preacher, Tim Keller, who I love. And he said something along the lines of, you can't help somebody without taking on some of their burden, without inconveniencing yourself to some extent. There is no version of actually assisting somebody and showing compassion that doesn't take a toll on you somehow. Your time, your energy, your finances, your availability, you know, whatever it is, you, the only way to help somebody is to assume some of that burden. And it's been a real challenge for me to run Cope Notes and run prison, both of which are largely thankless, fruitless. You know, I'm not getting paid, you know, I'm not getting paid to do this. I'm a full-time volunteer for my entire life. I've been working 80 hours a week since high school and not being compensated. And it's challenging to wake up the next day and continue to care for people. And I think the balance that I've had to strike is like, am I in the right headspace to help somebody right now? Or do I need to go on a bike ride? Or do I need to listen to some music and calm down so I can pick this back up and not do more damage than help? So I think, actually, we just wrote a song that hopefully we'll release soon. It's actually my favorite song we've ever written. And it's about compassion fatigue, about trying to help people and then realizing that you need help, you know?
Wow, that's awesome. I like that a lot. I'm excited to hear it too. I hope it does come out soon. So do you have any advice for people other than for what everyone is going through right now? Obviously being home and being secluded is not ideal for anyone.
Yeah.
So if there's any advice you have for anyone who's looking for something, like I live with my wife and one of our best friends. So I have human interaction. Still, and I've been doing this podcast, which has allowed me to like meet new people or reconnect with old friends and stuff like that, which has been very beneficial for me to have interaction with people. Even if it is virtual, it's still, you're having a conversation with another human being. But if you have any advice for someone like looking for something to help them through all of this, I am obviously in a lucky position to be able to have an outlet or have other people to lean on to, but not everyone has that. So if you have any advice for that, that would be very cool.
Yeah. I actually want to switch it up and give advice to the people who are not looking for that.
Oh, okay.
I see a lot of like tough guy mentality in the scene, and a big reason why I paint my nails on tour and dye my hair pink and wear flowery leggings on stage is because I'm trying to combat the whole image of having to wear the Doc Martens and the vest and be all tough and have long hair and be brutal. Like I feel for people right now who have to be strong for somebody, who have people depending on them, or if they're depending on their own strength. I want to encourage you, if you're listening to this and you are not looking for new ways to cope, if you are not looking for ways to support yourself and other people during this, to look for those things. I think no matter who you are, how strong you are, what your life was like before this versus now, you have to change something. The entire world has changed, and you can't be the only cog that decides that you will be unaffected by this, because that will hurt you and it will hurt the people that you love, the people that are depending on you. So I'm positive that there are people listening to this right now who think, oh, everyone else is just, they're not adapting. I adapted. Dude, realize that you are a person. You are a human with a brain and a heart. I spent the last 4 years out of therapy. I've been out of clinical treatment, and I started therapy again this year. If you have not been through traditional treatment, if you are not in mental health recovery, you have no idea what it feels like to spend 4 years out of it and then have to go back. Okay. It kills you. You feel like you are regressing, like you lost all of this ground that you gained. And still, I work in the mental health field and I'm doing this. Everybody, my therapist is seeing a therapist. You are not exempt. I don't care how many tattoos you have or how big your truck is or how heavy of music you listen to. You have to do something differently. Please take care of yourself. Please research stuff and stop excluding yourself from being human, because it does a lot more damage than it does good.
Yeah. All the times when there was this book I read called Make Time, and it made such a difference to me viewing like how a day is planned out or anything like that. And the biggest thing I took away from it, it's like, hey, if you don't work out today, hey, if you don't get everything you had on your list done today, like just brush it off. There's tomorrow. Like the biggest thing with me, and I'm still like working on it anyways, I let too many things like bother me, or if things are incomplete, it like drives me crazy. So the biggest thing for me has been like letting go of any things that are like mostly out of my control. Like stuff comes up in the day and you can't just get everything done, and it's fine, because it's really at the end of the day, it's not going anywhere. It's going to be there tomorrow. It's going to be there the next day if you don't get to it tomorrow. So that's been the biggest thing, is like, if you don't get what you had your mindset on, just let it go. It'll still be there. And it, like you said, we're all human. You know, it's like sometimes like Sam will sleep in or something, and she's like, oh, I feel like I wasted the day. I slept in until 9 or 10 or something. I'm like, it's fine. You're a human being. You need to sleep. It's fine. Like you're fine. You're up now. Just, you know, and I do the same thing. Like, you know, it's like, oh, I wanted to wake up at 6:30 today. I woke up at 8. Well, that's all right. I'll wake up at 6:30 tomorrow. You know, it's like, it's fine. Again, stuff's not going anywhere, but yeah. Thank you so much for that advice. And thank you so much for, you know, taking time out of your day to have this conversation with me. I'm like I said, we've been talking about this for a while now, so I'm glad it finally got to happen.
Heck yeah. Thanks for having me, dude.
Yeah. Anytime. Is there anything you want to plug before we get out of here?
Obviously Cope Notes. Go to copenotes.com, and we have a podcast. We have, t-shirts. I'm pretty sure we have obviously the subscription that you should check out. And then also we have gift subscriptions for friends and family members. So awesome. I encourage you to check that out. And then also Prison has a new song dropping October 13th, which is literally a week from the day that we are recording this. So please go check it out. The song is called I Don't Want to Be Afraid Anymore. And it is about how watching TV and consuming media during the pandemic can make you paranoid and afraid, and how your TV really, it's not your best friend. It doesn't have your best interest at heart, and you should really be connecting with people instead of technology.
That's awesome. Again, thank you for being on this, and everyone check out Cope Notes in Prison.
Yeah, buddy.
That's it for this one, guys. Thanks for checking this one out. I've been super excited to have the podcast back, coming back weekly, getting to interview new people. Feels really good. And if you want to support the podcast, go to Apple Podcasts, hit subscribe, review, 5 stars. Again, that helps so much. If you don't use Apple Podcasts, we're on Google Podcasts, Amazon Music. I put the audio versions on YouTube. We're on Spotify. So wherever you check out podcasts, we're there. And also, leftovers for merch are online now, metalcorenerds.com, very limited sizes. And if you add a pin, if you buy a t-shirt, you get $5 off. So metalcorenerds.com, limited sizes of shirts, and there's still some pins left. Go pick them up. I'm not reprinting them. When they're gone, they're gone. Until next time, this is Metalcore Nerds.